The rain came down in sheets over Grand Central Depot, turning the marble steps into a slick mirror of gaslight and shadow. Pearl Casey stood at the top of them, her boots planted wide, and stared at the body slumped against the fourth step from the bottom. Her father. She had known it would be him before the uniformed cop told her his name. There was something in the angle of his shoulders, the way his hands lay splayed on the wet stone like he'd been reaching for something, or someone. "You shouldn't be here, Miss Casey," the cop said. He was young, maybe 24, with a face that hadn't learned yet how to hold still when something terrible happened. His cap sat too far forward on his forehead, pushing his eyes down into the shadows beneath the brim. Pearl didn't look at him. She looked at her father's face. It was pale, almost translucent in the yellow glow of the depot's iron arches overhead. His lips were parted slightly, as though he'd been speaking when whatever happened to him caught him mid-word. "How long?" she asked. "Maybe an hour, maybe less. He was alone when the night watchman found him. No witnesses." The cop shifted his weight. "I figured you ought to know before you heard it from the papers." Pearl nodded once. She stepped down onto the first step. The marble was cold through the soles of her boots. She knelt beside her father's right hand, the one closest to her, and noticed the stain first. Dark, almost black in the low light, but unmistakably red where the gas lamp caught it at the right angle. Blood. Dried, mostly. Some of it still tacky. She reached out and touched his wrist. Cold, but not stone cold yet. There was warmth still there, buried deep. She pressed two fingers against his carotid and felt nothing. The pulse had been there when she arrived, or maybe she imagined it. Memory played tricks on you in the chill. "Daddy," she said. Her voice sounded strange to her own ears, flat and distant, like someone else was speaking through her mouth. She snatched the brass key from the sergeant's pocket before he could blink, her fingers closing around the cold metal with a grip that made him flinch. "Suicide," she spat, the word tasting like ash and lies on her tongue. She held the key up between them, a silent accusation that the official report was nothing but a convenient fiction designed to bury the truth. There was something wrong with the left side of his mouth, a slight drooping that hadn't been there before. Stroke, maybe, or internal bleeding. The kind of injury that killed slow and messy, giving you time to think about everything you'd done wrong while you bled out on public property. She shifted her gaze downward. His coat was dark wool, the good one he'd worn to church on Easter. She'd helped him button it that morning, standing on a stool because he was too tall for her to reach the top buttons without one. The memory came unbidden, sharp and clean as a needle prick. There was something in his breast pocket, a folded piece of paper, white against the dark wool. Pearl reached for it carefully, her fingers hesitating before she touched the fabric. She pulled the paper free. The surface was stiff, crusted with something dark and flaking at the edges. She unfolded it on her palm. The ink wasn't ink. It was thick, viscous, smeared by a trembling hand dipping directly into a wound. The letters ran shaky and uneven, each one a struggle against whatever was killing him. She recognized the angular loops, the way the letters leaned to the right like they were running away from something. His hand, but not his steadiness. Astrid Blackwell. Astrid Blackwell. She stared at the name until the letters blurred. Astrid Blackwell. Fifth Avenue Opulence. Widow of Cornelius Blackwell, who died under circumstances nobody discussed in polite company. The townhouse on 86th Street, with the wrought iron gates and the garden that nobody tended anymore. The woman who hosted charity galas and sat on boards and smiled at photographs with her silver hair pinned back and her gray eyes bright with something Pearl couldn't name. "Why her?" Pearl said aloud. The words hung in the rain between them, dissolving before they reached the ground. She folded the paper carefully and slid it into her coat pocket. Then she noticed the knot. It was tied around her father's left wrist, a loop of silk the color of dried roses, knotted with a precision that made Pearl's breath catch. She'd seen knots like this before. 6 months ago, in the warehouse on the East River, when she'd pulled the last thread from Sela's Vane's operation and watched the whole thing unravel like a cheap sweater. The syndicate had used silk knots to mark their territory, their messages, their dead. She thought cutting Vane out had ended that. She thought wrong. Pearl worked at the knot with her fingernails. The silk was smooth, almost oily to the touch, and the knot held fast, tight, deliberate, tied by someone who knew exactly what they were doing. She tugged harder. The knot didn't loosen. It tightened. "Miss Casey," The cop's voice was closer now. He'd stepped down from the landing. We need to move him. The rain isn't letting up. Pearl kept working at the knot. How long before you take him? An hour, maybe two. Coroner won't be available until morning. He paused. You can stay if you want, but I wouldn't recommend it. The weather's turning. She looked up at him then, really looked. His eyes were gray, tired, the eyes of a man who'd seen too much death and not enough justice. She wondered if he believed in either one. I'll be fine, she said. Just give me a minute. The cop nodded and retreated to the shelter of the depot's arched entrance, where the rain couldn't reach him. Pearl turned back to her father. She worked the knot again, her nails digging into the silk, her thumb pressing against the ridge of thread where it had been pulled tight. Something shifted under her touch. Small, hard, almost invisible. She traced the ridge with her fingertip and felt it a small lump, sewn into the knot itself, hidden inside the weave of the silk. Someone had stitched something into this knot, something small and deliberate. Pearl's pulse quickened. She reached into her coat pocket for the small scissors she carried for cutting thread, the ones she'd used since she was a girl helping her mother hem dresses. The scissors were brass, worn smooth from years of use, the blades sharp enough to split a thread without fraying it. She inserted the tip under the silk and began to cut. The knot unraveled slowly, strand by strand, and as it came apart, the lump fell into her palm. It was a key. Small, brass, the kind used for lockboxes and desk drawers. Engraved on the bow was a single letter, B. Blackwell. Pearl closed her fingers around the key. It was warm from her father's body, or maybe from her own grip. She looked at him one more time. His face had settled into something peaceful, almost serene, as though he'd finally said the words he'd been trying to speak. Astrid, she whispered. The rain intensified. Droplets hit the marble steps like tiny hammers, each one a percussive reminder that time was running out. She stood, tucking the key into her coat pocket beside the blood-written name, and turned toward the depot's great iron doors. In the shadows behind her, her father's body began to cool. Ahead of her, the depot breathed in ticks the hundreds of movements inhaling and exhaling at once, each gear train a lung, each escapement a heartbeat. She knew that sound better than her own breathing. It was the sound of a city that never slept, never stopped, never forgave. Pearl Casey walked into Grand Central Depot and didn't look back. The brass scissors felt heavier than they should have, a familiar weight against her palm. Pearl stood alone in the depot's main concourse while the uniformed cop went to fetch a carriage. She had told him she didn't need one. She had told him a dozen things she didn't need. What she needed was to understand why her father was lying on the fourth step from the bottom with his own blood spelling out a woman's name on the marble. She knelt. The rain had stopped, but the stone remained slick, reflecting the gas lamps overhead in fractured gold. Pearl leaned closer to the blood writing. Astrid Blackwell. The letters ran in a jagged diagonal, each stroke forced out with difficulty. She traced the direction of the flow with her eyes top to bottom, left to right, the way a right-handed person would write if they were struggling to keep their hand steady. Not rage. Rage is messy. Rage splatters. This was methodical, deliberate. Her father had taken the time to form each letter properly, pressing hard enough for the marble to catch the edge of the ink. She reached into her father's coat pocket with two fingers, avoiding the warm stains spreading across the fabric, and withdrew the silk knot. It sat in her palm like a sleeping thing. The weave was tighter than any knot she'd seen from Vane's crew. 6 months of tearing apart his operation had taught her the syndicate's signatures by touch alone. Vane's knots were functional, crude things tied by men who valued speed over craft. This one had structure. A master's hand. The silk caught the gaslight and threw it back in small green flashes, the way her father's eyes used to when he caught her stealing sugar cubes from the kitchen counter. You going to sit on the floor all night, or are you going to let me help? Doyle's voice came from behind her, gravel wrapped in fatigue. Pearl didn't turn. She could feel him assessing the scene the way he assessed everything tired, thorough, resigned to the messiness of it all. I'm not sitting, she said. I'm examining evidence. You're examining the floor. The floor is winning. Pearl closed her fingers around the silk knot and stood. Her knees popped. The concourse swallowed the sound. Doyle, she said, tell me what you told me on the phone. He stepped into the pool of gaslight and took off his hat. His hair was dark and wet at the edges, pressed flat against his skull. At 45, he looked 50, and the weight of the precinct hung on his shoulders like a second coat. "I told you they're calling it a stroke. Internal bleeding. Left side of the face drooped," cop said. "Maybe an hour, maybe less before he was gone." That's what the cop said. That's what the coroner will say once he gets here. The rain's letting up. We can move him to the morgue by midnight. Pearl looked back at the body. And the name, what does the coroner say about that? Doyle's jaw worked. He hadn't thought about it yet, or he was choosing not to. Both were the same choice, really. "Blood on the marble. Your father wrote it. That's what it looks like." "It is what it looks like." She turned the silk not over in her palm, but the way it's written matters. "Look at the strokes, Doyle, look at them." He came closer, squinting. "I'm a sergeant, Miss Casey, not a handwriting analyst." "No, you're a man who's been at this precinct long enough to know that people don't write their enemies' names in perfect cursive when they're dying of rage." She held the knot up between them. "My father didn't write that in anger. He wrote it in haste. There's a difference. Haste implies urgency. Urgency implies he was trying to get the information out before he lost the ability, which means someone was still near when he wrote it, or he expected someone to come." Doyle rubbed his temple. "You're saying he was murdered?" "I'm saying he bled out on the fourth step from the bottom of Grand Central Depot, and the only clue to his killer's identity is a name written in his own blood and a knot that doesn't belong to Vane." She paused. "Which means either Vane has gotten smarter or someone else is running the syndicate now." Doyle didn't answer right away. The depot breathed around them the hundreds of gear trains inhaling, the escapements ticking like a thousand small hearts. Somewhere above them, a clock struck a quarter past. The sound rolled through the iron rafters and settled into the stone. "Miss Casey," he said finally, "I need you to listen to me. You go home, you wash up, you sleep. Tomorrow morning, I'll pull every file on an Astrid Blackwell that's sitting in the archives, and I'll bring them to you. But tonight, you're not doing anything useful standing here arguing with me about handwriting." Pearl's mouth tightened. She wanted to argue. She wanted to tell him that arguing was the only thing keeping her from walking over to that body and shaking it until it admitted it was still alive. Instead, she said, "How long will that take?" "2 days, maybe three. The archives are." 3 days is too long. "Do you have a better idea?" She looked at the silk knot. It had uncoiled slightly in her fist, revealing the complexity of the weave three crossings, a hidden loop, the kind of structure that took hours to tie properly. Vane's men didn't have hours. Vane's men had minutes. This knot had been made slowly, deliberately, by someone who understood that the knot itself was the message. "Don't thank me, just stay alive, okay? I can't lose another person I care about." Doyle nodded, satisfied in the way that men are satisfied when they've offered something practical and been refused. He put his hat back on. "I'll have a carriage send you home. You shouldn't be alone tonight." "Don't send a carriage, I'll walk."
"Miss Casey."
"I'll walk, I need the air." He studied her face for a long moment. Pearl kept her expression flat, the way she kept her voice clipped armor built from years of proving she wasn't her father's daughter, wasn't soft, wasn't the kind of girl who broke when her father came home late from work smelling of tobacco and regret. Doyle saw through it sometimes. Tonight he chose not to. "Fine," he said, "but I'm walking you to the corner." "Stay alive, Pearl, that's all I'm asking." At the corner of Park Avenue, Doyle stopped. A horse-drawn cab rattled past, its driver pulling the reins tight against the chill. Doyle watched it go, then looked back at Pearl. "Your father was a good man," he said. Pearl didn't answer. "He liked you," Doyle continued. "More than he showed it, more than he ever knew how to show it, but he liked you." She felt something tighten behind her ribs. "Thank you, Sergeant." "Don't thank me, just stay alive, okay? I can't lose another person I care about because I'm too stubborn to admit I need backup." The admission surprised her. Doyle rarely said things like that. Pearl nodded once, sharply, and turned onto Park Avenue. She didn't look back. She walked fast, her boots striking the wet cobblestones with a rhythm that matched the ticking still echoing in her ears. 3 blocks from her building, she noticed the man in the gray coat. He stood across the street beneath a gas lamp that flickered weakly, his hands in his pockets, his posture relaxed in a way that felt rehearsed. Pearl slowed.
She told herself it was coincidence gray coats were common on a night like this, and Park Avenue was full of men going home from clubs or dinners or wherever men went when they didn't have somewhere better to be. But the way he stood weight on his left leg, head tilted slightly toward her, wasn't the posture of a man waiting for anyone. It was the posture of a man watching. Pearl crossed the street. She walked faster. She didn't look back, because looking back would mean acknowledging him, and acknowledging him would mean admitting that someone was watching her, and admitting that would mean accepting that her father's death wasn't an accident or a stroke or anything simple that a coroner could stamp with a date and move on to the next body. The man in the gray coat didn't follow. She made it to her building's front door without feeling footsteps behind her. But as she pushed through the heavy wood and into the dim lobby, she felt the prickling on the back of her neck that meant eyes were on her. Eyes that would stay there. Eyes that belonged to someone who understood knots. Inside the lobby, the night porter nodded at her and returned to his newspaper. Pearl didn't stop. She climbed the stairs to her floor, unlocked her apartment door, and stepped inside. The apartment was dark and cold. She hadn't lit the gas in weeks. Pearl struck a match and held it to the burner. Blue flame bloomed, then steadied. She lit the lamp on the hall table and carried it into her small sitting room, setting it down on the desk beside her father's old sewing box. She took the silk knot out of her pocket and laid it beside the brass scissors. Under the lamplight, the weave showed its full complexity: three crossings, a hidden loop, the kind of structure that took hours to tie properly by someone who understood that the knot itself was the message. Pearl sat down. She picked up the brass scissors and set them back down. She picked up the silk knot and examined it again, running her thumb over the ridges of thread, feeling the tension in each crossing, counting the stitches in her mind the way she counted breaths when she couldn't sleep. Three crossings, she thought, that's not Vane's work. Vane's knots are two crossings. Simple, fast, functional. She set the knot down and stared at it. The silk gleamed faintly in the lamplight, green gold, like her father's eyes. Outside, the city continued to breathe. Inside, Pearl Casey sat alone with a dead man's handwriting and a knot she couldn't identify, and for the first time since she'd found him on the steps, she let herself feel the shape of what had happened to him. Someone had come to him, someone had spoken to him, and he had written a name in his own blood before he died. Not in rage, in haste. Which meant he'd been trying to warn someone. Pearl picked up the silk knot again and held it to the lamplight. The hidden loop caught the flame and threw it back in a small green flash. She couldn't place the knot's origin, but she would. The match on her desk had burned down to nothing, leaving only a wisp of acrid smoke that curled toward the ceiling before dissipating into the gloom. Pearl extinguished the lamp with a decisive twist, plunging the room into shadow save for the faint, bruised glow of a moon that would not crest the horizon for hours. In the stillness, she listened to the distant hum of the city, a low vibration against the floorboards that seemed to pulse in time with her own waiting heart.